Allergies, pollen in the air, dogs in the house, mold in the basement. Whatever triggers your allergy symptoms, it can really hold you back. Break through with Allegra 5-in-1 Relief. Allegra works fast, won't make you drowsy, provides 24-hour multi-symptom relief, and it's effective every day. Break through allergies with Allegra. Starts working in 1 hour. Use only as directed. Guaranteed or your money back. Visit Allegra.com.
Hello. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Two-Man Game with the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris, and this episode is sponsored by Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/almighty to get your free 30-day trial and a free audiobook. You can add these books to your Kindle, Android, iPhone, MP3 player, pretty much whatever you have. Again, go to audibletrial.com/almighty.
Welcome in. Once again, you are back with your boys, Matt Barnes and Chris Hines, on the Two-Man Game, the podcast brought to you by the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. You can find me and my tweets on Twitter at Matt_Two-Man Game. I am, of course, as always, joined by Chris Hines, my co-host. You can find him on Twitter at Simply Hoops with a Z. You can check out the Simply Hoops podcast, and you can find his writing at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. We have just finished up All-Star Weekend. All-Star Weekend is over. A lot of stuff going on as the trade deadline approaches. We are a couple of days away from the Thursday deadline, and a big move was made right at the conclusion of the All-Star Game. Boogie Cousins, the man, the myth, the problem, the former franchise player of the Sacramento Kings, is on his way out. He was shipped to New Orleans, where the All-Star Game actually went down, for not very much, for not what I would perceive to be enough. Boogie Cousins and Omri Caspi were sent to the Pelicans in exchange for Buddy Hield, this past draft number, I want to say number 6 or number 7 pick in the draft, along with Langston Galloway, Tyree Evans, who was formerly of the Sacramento Kings, and a first and second round pick in this upcoming draft. So, Chris, we have Boogie Cousins moving to New Orleans. What did you think of this trade? Was it enough? Did they get even a fraction of what they probably should have gotten? And what does this do for the Pels going forward? How do you see AD and Boogie fitting together in that front court?
I think for the Kings, this was probably one of the worst trades ever. Like, it was just bad, just bad. And I said this before last week when we had our Kings episode, that they're one of the worst teams at drafting, and all they did was go get draft picks, but they are terrible at picking good players. They've never picked a good player. So let me just recap some of the players they missed out on. Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry, DeMar DeRozan, and Andre Drummond. Oh, and they drafted Isaiah Thomas. They did get him, but they also let him go for next to nothing as well. So this team
they
is
drafted
just...
Hassan Whiteside as well.
Yeah, and Hassan Whiteside, I forgot him. So they've literally been making the worst picks. That's why this trade was so bad to me. If this, now with the draft being so good, if they were good at picking players, like if the Thunder would have made this trade, it would be good, because the Thunder are good at drafting. They drafted Durant, Westbrook, and Harden, all three of those players. And I think Ibaka as well. So the fact that the Thunder can pick, that would have been a good trade for them. But for the Kings, it's just a terrible move, because you give up the best player you've had in a long time. Clearly, it's not up for debate. For next to nothing, you get a pick and Buddy Hield, which is, he doesn't seem like a superstar right now. Maybe in 3 or 4 years, he'd be a veteran. I see him as a consistent veteran in the league. I don't see him as being a 35 a night guy, like, ever. I just don't see it. I don't believe it. Call me crazy. But for them to get picks is just a bad move because they don't do well with picks. So that's why this move was so bad to me. Not necessarily because of yield or the picks, just because of what they do with picks. Like, and then to put Cousins and Anthony Davis on the same team, that's a little terrifying because they're not a team that you can say, okay, we'll play small ball and stretch the floor, because both of those guys can move. And I think that DeMarcus Cousins now, he understands that, okay, this is the time I have to switch it up. This is the time I have to change my mentality, my attitude, because I'm on a different team in a different city. The attitude has to change now because this is, I won't say his last chance because another team will definitely take him, but this is his last chance to really be considered one of the best in the league, you know, because if he messes this one up, then it's going to be clear that it wasn't just the Kings and it wasn't just a losing situation, because I don't think the Pelicans will be all that great this year because, of course, they had to change some things up so late in the season. But I do think that down the line, as far as next year, they got a chance to be good. So I just think the Kings lost bad. They became the worst team in franchise sports. Like, again, they dropped right below the Knicks again. Before, the Knicks haven't made a bad move yet. So right now, the Kings are in last place. But I definitely would say that it was just a bad move again, and I saw it coming. I knew it was going to happen.
Right. A couple things about this whole deal. Sacramento currently better record than the Pels. Not by much. They're a game better. They're 24-33. They were a game and a half out of the eighth spot. The Pels are at 23-34. They're 2.5 out of Denver. So I feel like they're going to make a strong run to that eighth spot. They may not get it, but whether they do or they don't, I'm not sure how much it really matters. Now, Vlade Divac was in the media and has been in the media for the last several days, and he said something to the effect of him turning down a better deal a few days ago because the agents, I think, for DeMarcus Cousins and possibly for their trade partners were dragging their feet. And I don't think Boogie was giving these other trade partners assurances that he was going to stay with these teams long term if he would have been traded. Now, Boogie leaves a good amount of change on the table with this trade. He was eligible for that huge contract, the 5-year 209 deal that we have talked about at length on previous shows. And now the maximum that he can get from the Pels when it comes time for him to re-sign is somewhere in the neighborhood of $175, $180 million. And if he were to go to another team other than the Pels, then we're talking about the maximum amount of dollars that he can get on a 4-year deal being somewhere in the neighborhood of $130 million. So he did lose a little bit of money in this. But I think what is interesting and what I'm looking forward to observing as far as this whole thing playing out is, does Boogie Cousins change his tune? Does he change his demeanor? Does he become the guy that he needs to be, cooler with the text, just kind of get his head straight? I have sort of subscribed to the theory that Boogie Cousins is this way because he's sick of losing. You know, we look at this guy, you assume that he probably started playing AAU basketball on a fairly regular basis somewhere around age 10 or 11. I think that's probably fair to say, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So this guy, he plays AAU and high school ball for, I don't know, from let's say age 11 until he's out of high school. So that's around 7 years. Then he goes to Kentucky, and Kentucky has obviously been very solid for several years now under John Calipari. So we're talking about 8 years of Boogie Cousins playing ball from the time he's a young kid all the way to his one and only year of college. And he's winning games at an extraordinarily high clip. He's probably winning, I would say it's safe to say that he probably won 70 to 80% of the games that he played during those years. So he's drafted to the Kings, and the Kings, like you said, garbage organization from top to bottom. The owner, Vivek Ranadive, I hope I'm saying that right. The owner is a little bit of a crackpot. He's had some crazy-ass theories that he's floated to the media over the years. So things are just bad there, and they're losing at this just crazy rate. Never won more than 33 games in a season in the 6 years that Boogie has been with the Kings. So I don't know. I feel like it's safe to say that I think a lot of this knucklehead behavior and the crazy stuff that he does, the technicals, the outbursts, the tantrums, I feel like a lot of it could possibly be tied in to the incredible amount of losing that they've done over the years. And I think now we have an opportunity to see, is this guy going to be able to change himself? Is he going to change his tune and kind of be the guy that a guy who averages 28, 11, and 5 should be? Be a leader, be a example on the court, don't be volatile. I mean, you can still be yourself, but having 17 techs 50 games into the season is excessive. So what do you think of this? Do you think he's going to change? Do you think there's any truth to this theory that I have, that the losing has something to do with him just kind of being a knucklehead on the court? Do you think he's going to change? Do you think that you could see him being different, meshing with AD and kind of cooling it as far as all the knucklehead behavior goes?
I don't see him clashing with Anthony Davis, because I think guys like Boogie Cousins, like him, he has to play with somebody who he respects. I don't think that too many players he's played with have been on his level talent-wise to where he's like, okay, this guy is good like I am, so I'm going to respect him. Other than Rudy Gay and maybe Isaiah Thomas. But other than that, I can't think of anybody else who he has had to really share space with that he respected and he, you know, would stay in line. So I do think that him and AD will get along well, you know, because they're two of the most talented young guys. They did play in college together, and I just expect a lot from them. If the Pelicans can somehow get them a good guard, man, it would be interesting to see what they can do. Of course, they'll still need a bench, but it'll be nice to at least see these guys compete, because I wrote about this a while ago. It was just sad to see these two guys playing on such terrible teams, and they're some of the greatest talent we have in the league right now. You know, I want to see these guys in the playoffs at least eventually. You know, it's sad to see two of the top players, easily top 25 players, just not play in May at all. You know, I definitely want to see them at least be the eighth seed, at least, you know, so we can see that talent, see what they have. You know, I want to see if Boogie can really bring it when it's time, you know, because right now we see him play well down the stretch and late games of the season, but I want to see how he can perform when it's playoff time and you're playing for something, you're trying to get to that next round. You know, I really want to see that.
Right, absolutely. I think that I agree with that. As far as AD and Boogie go, Boogie slightly older than Anthony Davis, so they never were actually teammates. AD was the centerpiece of that championship squad in Kentucky the one and only year that he was there, but they are both Wildcats. So I really think, looking at this, looking at the transaction, Sacramento, obviously, I mean, they can say that they kind of wanted this to happen, that it needed to happen. There was one of their play-by-play guys, I believe, or maybe it's just a guy in Sacramento media that said that this trade needed to happen and that they were never going to win with Boogie. He basically went on this long Twitter rant, just trashing Boogie and saying that, in not so many words, that he was a big part of the reason why their team was such a mess. Now we look at New Orleans, and we have Alvin Gentry there. Of course, things have not gone very well for Alvin Gentry there so far, but I do believe that this man can coach. He's had a lot of success in other places he's been around. He coached the Clippers, the Pistons. He, of course, most recently was with Phoenix before he was the assistant with Golden State the year that they won the title. So he's dealt with egos before. He was the coach of Amari Stoudemire, who is a little bit of a enigma. He's, I don't think, quite on the level of Boogie Cousins as far as volatility and stuff goes. But he's got an ego. He was in his prime. He was not always the easiest guy to deal with. He also coached Sean Marion, and same kind of deal. Marion is a quiet guy, but he also had an ego. So he's got experience managing egos. And I think that this could be the guy that Cousins needs, and hopefully Gentry grabs his ear and gains his respect. And I think that if he does, that they could be a serviceable team. I'm not going to say that they're going to challenge for a top spot, because like you said, I still think they are a piece or two away. But Jrue Holiday, he has been an all-star in this league. He's definitely not a scrub. He's serviceable. They still have holes in this roster, but they're definitely on their way. I do like the trade. And is it safe to say that next year, full season under their belt, that they are somewhere around, I don't know, 6-7 in the West next year?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think they have a chance. I don't know. I believe that them two can make it work, man. I see it happening, but I feel sorry for Kings fans, man. Like, oh man, just it seems like it just only gets worse for them just constantly. I really think that the only way that the NBA can even help this situation is if the Kings either relocate or they get a new owner. Like, you have to get rid of that guy, because he's the one who's like seriously in on the process. He's in the draft room, in the war room, everything, and you just have to get rid of him. You have to. Things will not turn around until you do.
Right, I agree. I think here on the two-man game, we are definitely advocates of just taking owners and taking away their toys with all these rich guys that don't know what the hell they're doing. The last show, we were ready to run James Dolan out of town, and this episode, it is you, Vivek Ranadive. We want your ass out of Sacramento, bro. You do not know what you're doing. So, I mean, it definitely would behoove that squad, would behoove the whole city of Sacramento, if they could wash their hands of Vivek Ranadive and his 4-on-5 notions, the crazy things that have came out of this guy's mouth, the coaching carousel that he's had. Now they have a solid coach in place, but I mean, if you're Dave Yeager, you've got to just kind of be somewhere in Sacramento, off in a corner, scratching your head and saying, at least I get to cash these checks. Because other than that, there can't be a whole lot of perks coming with that job. We did have another trade that came through the wire today, not quite on the level of the DeMarcus Cousins deal to New Orleans, but Lou Williams, the leading scorer for the Los Angeles Lakers, was shipped to Houston for Corey Brewer and some draft picks. So we've got Houston adding another piece, adding another scorer, another shooter to their arsenal. And we've got the Lakers with the addition of Magic Johnson and the departure of Mitch Kupchak and Jim Buss. The Lakers are just selling everything that's not named Brandon Ingram, that's not nailed to the ground. They're just getting rid of just about everybody that they can. So Lou Williams is now a Rocket. He's averaging just over 18 a game this year. What does this do for the Rockets? Does this push them higher into contention? Does this put them on the level of San Antonio, maybe, with this move?
I wouldn't say on the level of San Antonio, but I don't think that their issue was scoring. You know, I think that we saw them being one of the best scoring teams in the league so far this year. You know, they've been playing well offensively. I think if anything, they needed a defensive player. They needed a guy on the wing like Kent Bazemore or something, you know, that can really help stretch the floor and play D. You know, I don't think that they needed Lou Will. I think that it's always good to have another scorer, you know, to help James Harden out. But I don't think that you definitely need to go and get him now. But, I mean, you give up Corey Brewer. I don't know. I don't think that it helped them a lot. But it didn't hurt them too much either. But the Lakers, I think it helped them a lot. Because now they have another pick. Magic is in there. He's bringing some more people in already. They got rid of Mitch Kupchak. The Lakers are making moves, and I really like how they have committed finally 100% to rebuilding. They feel like we have all the young players we need with Randle, with Russell, with all the young players they have. They feel like, okay, now we get one more player in this draft, this is the perfect time. So I think the Lakers made the best move possible getting that pick. Even though it won't be a high pick, it won't be really high, but the draft is so stacked this year, I can almost guarantee you the guy who gets picked last is still going to be a good player. I can almost guarantee it. So I think that was a great move for the Lakers, a so-so move for the Rockets, but the Lakers are in the right direction, finally.
Right. The draft pick is unprotected, and so I think that it's probably going to be somewhere in the mid-20s or perhaps the early 20s. We've got Corey Brewer going to the Lakers, another vet that they I don't know, honestly, if he's going to be in the rotation or not, but they have put Luol Deng and Mozgov on the shelf, and they're definitely going with the youth movement in L.A., which is, I think, a big reason why Williams was dealt. The reason why I like the move for the Rockets is because it really does just strengthen that second unit. And let's be honest, when we're looking at these teams that they're going to face in the playoffs, it's going to be all about firepower. These days of the lockdown, grind out, low 90s defensive battles in the playoffs, I think that we're kind of seeing a transition away from that. We're not necessarily going to be seeing a lot of that. So Lou Williams, he can get buckets. So I think that definitely helps them in that way. He doesn't play a lot of D. You're right about that. They let go of a guy in Brewer who was a very tenacious perimeter defender. So that does kind of hurt them. But they do. I mean, if we really look at the Rockets now, They are just loaded with offensive weapons. The thing for me, looking at the West, is that we're really starting to see some separation in the first four seeds in particular. We've got San Antonio 4 games behind Golden State, and then the Rockets are 4 games behind the Spurs. So there's 8 games separating these top 3 seeds, and then we look down to 4, and the Clippers are 4 games behind the Rockets. So there's 12 games separating 1 through 4, and then things get kind of bunched up. So you really don't think, if we're looking today at the playoff picture and what this does for them, you don't think that this strengthens their chances in the second round against the Spurs with all this firepower, with the Spurs just having Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, a bunch of old dudes, and then a couple of guys that can ball that we've never heard of? You don't think that this strengthens their chances and that they could possibly even pull an upset against the Spurs in the second round?
I think it's possible, because now I think about it, I mean, the Spurs are kind of slow this year. They are kind of lagging. So I do think that they could possibly outrun him. It just depends. I think that series is going to come down to coaching. You know, I think Popovich might be able to still outcoach D'Antoni. You know, if he can.
Oh, definitely.
Then, yeah, so I think that one might come down to coaching. And then, you know, the talent won't matter as much. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm really excited to see that series, man.
Right, yeah. They really, I feel like Houston is looking strong. D'Antoni has to be right near the top of the conversation for Coach of the Year. We look at all these guys. Eric Gordon, he showed up and showed out on All-Star Weekend, was just unconscious during the three-point shootout. They've got Ryan Anderson. Pat Beverly is just like a little bulldog on defense. They've got Clint Capella. They've got a lot of guys that just complement Harden so well. And I mean, we look at Harden, and I think that even right now, with a little bit more than 20 games left in the season, we're talking about a guy that should be the favorite for MVP. So the Rockets really have turned things around quickly. I think that Daryl Morey again, I mean, we look at this Rockets organization, and it is really just a bunch of guys that have performed so well that they're all in a position to win an award in their specified field. I mean, Morey could very easily be the executive of the year when things are all said and done this year. So we look at these executives and we look at the way that teams are ran and we look at what to do and what not to do. We see it all over. We talk about it earlier in the show when we talk about organizations trending in the wrong way in terms of the Kings and teams that are on the uptick in terms of the Rockets. And we land on the LA Lakers, and the Lakers are making moves. They have let go of a bunch of guys in the front office. Jeannie Buss had to fire her brother, which is just, I mean, that's got to hurt. But they bring in Magic, and Magic is now the head of basketball operations for the Lakers. And, I mean, this is going to be a tall order. What do you see Magic doing, and can he be an executive and be successful? We don't always see superstars being successful in these kind of roles. How do you think Magic's going to fit in this new job?
I can see Magic being successful. You know, I think that he definitely has the favor of the fans. That's one thing Kupchak didn't have. He didn't have that. He wasn't a fan favorite. You know, I'm here in L.A., and a lot of the fans just dislike every move he made. All the choices and just decisions were bad, you know, from a fan's point of view. So one thing Magic has on the side is the fans definitely support him. You know, they believe in him and whatever he wants to do right now. And he has the right tools at his disposal. You know, with that pick, I think it's really going to tell a lot. You know, if they can, if they get a good pick, and the Lakers even look good when it comes to the summer league and off season, preseason games, and you know, people will be singing his high praises. You know, people around this time next year will be able to tell if Magic is doing a good job or not. You know, even though he doesn't have a lot to do, a lot to work with, you know, we'll be able to see next year if he's building in the right direction.
Right. Now, I'm not sure if you saw it or not. You probably have. They got a quote from Magic when he was promoted, named the head of basketball operations for the Lakers. And it says that one of his first calls is going to be to the man Kobe being Bryant. And I don't know if he's going to offer him a job or if he just is going to have him be like a consultant that isn't really on the payroll. What do you think of Kobe possibly becoming involved off the court and sort of helping Magic? Is that something that's feasible? And if it is, do you think Kobe's cut out for this kind of stuff?
That's a tough one because I don't know. I feel like because of Kobe's personality, it'll be difficult to see him in that capacity. You know, it's just difficult to see him even on the sidelines. It's just not really him. So I just couldn't see him doing that. But then again, with the way the NBA is going now, it wouldn't shock me for him to come in and be a GM and just be amazing at it. Like that would not shock me. That would be amazing to see, man. It'd be amazing. I think people are really scared because how Jordan has been as the owner and the GM of the Bobcats, and he just keeps picking this terrible draft picks as well. So I think that's what's scaring most people. But I don't know. I'll give Kobe a chance, though. I'll give him a year. I'll give him a year or two.
Right. You saw that, right? You know what I'm talking about, that he said that Kobe was going to be one of his first calls.
Oh, yeah, I definitely did see that. And I think that's another thing. Well, that's why the fans like Magic, because he's willing to do things like that. Because if all of us were in Magic's shoes, that's the first thing we would do is call Kobe and ask him for help or ask him what he thinks. You know, that's what we would do. So him doing that just makes him more of a fan favorite.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if we look at what's going on right now with the Lakers and where they're positioned, you know, they could run into some trouble with this whole draft pick. You know, they are one of the worst teams in the league, let's face it, record-wise. So they are probably going to be somewhere in the top 3-4 picks. Let's say that the pick lands somewhere inside the top 3. And for one reason or another, one of the teams positioned ahead the Lakers decides to select Josh Jackson, the swingman out of Kansas, instead of one of these two point guards, what does Magic do in that situation? Are they in love with D'Angelo Russell enough to where they won't take one of these guards? Or could you see them taking Fultz or Ball and potentially trying to shop D'Angelo?
Honestly, I was thinking about that earlier. If they took Ball and then decided to give up D'Angelo. But then again, I don't feel like Magic would give away D'Angelo because, again, he's such a fan favorite. And I think that they want to keep that young core they have together. So I see them trying to take a player on a big man if possible. There aren't that many good big men in the draft right now. Instead, none have really emerged. But I don't see them giving up anything they have. They're going to take a player and then try to build with that player. I don't see them trying to shop anybody they have. You know, I don't see anybody. I don't see them giving up nobody. You know, the teams were trying to get Ingram, and they just said no, which honestly makes sense because Ingram, Russell, Larry Nance, Randall, you just can't give up any of those guys. Just together, they make a great core, and it's great for where the league is going. Even Clarkson is great there. They just need to add. I feel like they need two more pieces, a good bench guy, and then one more good starter. So if they found a stretch four, then it wouldn't. That'd be a good pick for me.
Right. So, I mean, we're looking at all of these guys that are available. Not a lot of bigs available in this draft. And one thing that kind of stood out to me during this whole Boogie Cousins thing is that it was reported that the Lakers were offered DeMarcus Cousins for Brandon Ingram, and they declined. Can you explain to the listeners that may not be too familiar with Brandon Ingram? I know that you've probably seen him ball more than most of us. Why is this guy untouchable, and what is it that they are seeing in Brandon Ingram to where they wouldn't pull a string on a Boogie Cousins trade? Because to me, that was shocking. If that is true, that shocked me. So what is it about Brandon Ingram that is so untouchable?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't trade Ingram for Cousins simply because Cousins is older. He's going to want big money soon. And like I said, with that core they have, I wouldn't want to ruin that situation that we have going. So I would have kept Ingram as well. And they want to keep him because they see he has potential. He has a lot of potential. When I watch him play, he reminds me of a much more raw, younger Kevin Durant. Like, he is that prototype. He has the size, the length, the ability. So I think the Lakers are being patient with him. And they are saying, okay, it's early in his career. We're going to give him time to grow and blossom. And I think in 2 years, I said this when he got drafted, I think in 2 years, he's going to be one of the best players in the league. You know, he just needs that time to, of course, you know, work and I don't think he needs to put on a lot of muscle because we see KD didn't put on a lot of muscle. He's not huge now. He just got better at using his length. So I think that's something that that he will definitely develop over time. And Lakers are being patient, you know, and I'd rather stay with the guy I have and I know has potential because you know what you're going to get from Cousins. And in that young core situation that you already have going, you don't really need another headache because you don't know if Cousins is going to give you a headache there. So that's too big of a risk. When you have Ingram locked into this contract for 4 years, you don't need to ruin that. Just keep Ingram, keep rebuilding. Like, this is another situation that proved to me that the Lakers are committed to rebuilding, which is respectful. I like it. You know, they finally said, okay, we're going to rebuild. They gave away an old veteran in Lou Williams that could get buckets. That honestly, he won them a couple games and kept him in a lot of games they actually lost. So them giving him away is really helping them with that draft pick. So it was a good move all around. Ingram he has too much potential to give away.
Right, yeah, you are sort of betting on his future if you're not willing to move him. And as far as him bulking up and stuff like that, when guys are that lanky and you're basically all arms and legs, even if he gets into the gym and he just goes nuts on the weights, he's never going to be a big, big guy. Just the way that he's built, the way that his arms and legs are so long, He's never going to be this huge guy. So he probably does need to gain maybe 10, 15 pounds because it is rumored that he only weighs 180 pounds and he's supposedly 6'11". So he does probably need to at least get up over 200 pounds, but he's never going to be this big guy. He's never going to be built like LeBron James or anything like that. So, I mean, I do see it. I watch a lot of Duke basketball. I did see your reference to Kevin Durant, just as far as the way that he plays on the perimeter, his nice moves off the dribble, he's got a silky shot. He does have a lot of potential. I am sort of surprised at the perception of D'Angelo Russell and how they kind of, I don't know if it is just a national thing. I think that you probably be able to speak to it a little bit better than me, just because you are there in Cali and you're seeing a lot of the, I don't know if it's the local media, but I just know that a lot of the 710 radio guys, they really do have their ear to the streets when we're talking about the Lakers. So just real quick, D'Angelo Russell, what is the read on him as an organization and where do you really see him going? Is he going to develop the way that they had hoped that he would?
I think he's been really hot and cold this year, and a lot of people still have faith. He's been on and off, good games, bad games. But I think that they do believe in him. They're going to give him more time. But them having Clarkson is like a safety valve, you know. So if D'Angelo Russell doesn't, you know, if he doesn't work out, they'll get rid of him quick. But he still has time. I think he has the rest of this year and next year to really prove that he could be a starting guard that can lead the Lakers to a championship. He has time left on the clock, you know, and his stock is still high. So even if he doesn't work out for the Lakers, they can still get rid of him and he'll get a lot of return, you know. So I think it's a win-win.
Right. And as far as him and Clarkson go, in my mind, and just from what I see and watching them play, watching some of the Lakers games, I feel like Clarkson is ahead of Russell right now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'm one of the few people that believe that. I'm really a believer that Clarkson is ahead of him as far as just development. But you can see that D'Angelo Russell sort of has a little more talent. He can shoot a little better. But I would still have Clarkson in that role just right there at sixth man, which is what they have him, which is perfect. And I really respect Clarkson for accepting that. You know, he was a starter for a second, and he had to get pushed back. And he just accepted his role as sixth man, and he plays it well. You know, he comes off the bench and does what he has to do. And I really respect players that can do that.
Right. And then just real quick, last thing on the Lakers with the whole thing with Magic and them just kind of to build this team piece by piece. If you could give the listeners your thoughts on Julius Randle. Where do you see him going? Who's the guy we can compare him to? And does he fit in the long-term plans of the Lakers?
Right now, I have a perfect comparison for you for Julius Randle. Right now, where he is in his career, Zach Randolph, a younger Zach Randolph. But for Randle to be successful in the NBA, he has to get at least a 15-20 footer. You know, that jump shot that Blake Griffin has developed, he needs one of those because he's so explosive and he can really finesse his way around the rim and dunk on people, which is great. But the way the NBA is going, you have to be able to shoot to be a lasting player. So I think that he still has to work on that 15-20, 25-foot jump shot. You know, not necessarily a three ball. We don't want him to turn into Serge Ibaka. He just needs to be able to hit a little bank shot, you know, and needs to be able to step out, you know, just make a jumper, because then when he gets that jumper, he becomes more of a threat. So when he pump fakes, defense jumps, he goes right around him. He can score, he can drive and dish, we see he can pass. So once he develops a nice jump shot, which I think he'll have next season, I think next season he's going to have it. He's going to step his game up. So next year he'll have that jumper. He'll really raise as a player.
Right. I mean, the thing for me watching the Lakers, watching all these young guys, the thing for me about Julius Randle that I think that I like the most is that he's one of the few guys at his size and his strength that can grab a defensive rebound and push the ball up the floor like a guard. He's really quick. He does have a vision. You kind of alluded to that. He's a good passer. His shot is a little, I think that it's a mechanics thing right now. I feel like his shot's just a little bit
broken. Yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that shooting, the shooting hand, his elbow is just, it's not where it needs to be. I think that's why his shot is inconsistent a lot of the times. He's missing off to the left or the right. And anybody that's worked on shooting or anything like that, they kind of know that if you're off to the left or the right, it's a fundamental thing. It doesn't have anything to do with just the way that you're not putting too much or not enough on the ball. He's got some mechanics issues when it comes to his shot. But I mean, we look at all these guys and they're so young. You know, I think that Randall, out of all these guys, he's probably the oldest. And what is he, 22 years old maybe? So, I mean, they're all really young. They're all young. They're all developing. They've got Luke Walton there. I think that he's a very solid coach. I just think that they need to keep trending in the right direction. I think Magic can kind of assist them with that and make sure that they make the right draft picks going forward. And I do think that they have a good core. I just think that they're missing some pieces. I think that the fan base got really hyped the first 20-25 games of the season because they came out like a house on fire the first 20-25 games of the year. They played really strong. They were winning a lot of games. And then things kind of came back down to earth for them over the last 30 games or so. So I do still think they're going in the right direction. It's just maybe a year or two, player or two away.
Yeah, man, I agree. I think that, like I said, if they could get a solid bench player, maybe two solid bench players and one more starter, not necessarily a perennial all-star player, but they need just a consistent big man. Mozgov is decent, but they need one more. I don't know. I can't really pinpoint who they need exactly right now, but they just need one more guy, man. Just one more guy in that starting five to really, really take the next step.
Right. The guy that you're describing, a gritty, a big guy, a guy that's going to kind of control things defensively in the paint and kind of do their dirty work and be that guy. You know, I think that Larry Nance Jr. sort of fits in that role, but I think the guy that they're going to be able to get that is going to be able to do all those things would be a guy that they would probably find early in the second round and just try to develop a la Draymond Green or even Larry Nance, who was a second round pick. So they're on their way. They're on the come up. They are headed in the right direction as opposed to some of these other teams that we have in the league that their record is under 500 and they're still heading in the wrong direction, like the Knicks or the Nets or the Sacramento Kings. So that is going to do it for us here at the two-man game. That was the trade deadline edition. Probably, I'd say, part one. There's going to be a part two coming because we know that over the next couple of days, there's going to be so many moves that are going to be made around the league. We're looking forward to talking about all of the stuff that happens around the league with you all. Real quickly, before we say goodnight to all of the listeners, great news for me, Matt Barnes, formerly of the Sacramento Kings, he's no longer in the league right now, so I do not have to be confused with this fool. You know, at least right now, I'm not sure if he's going to latch on with another team, but as of now, he's unemployed. And for me, that's great because being asked if I'm that Matt Barnes on a regular basis, it gets to be really annoying. So good news for me. So that's going to do it. For the two-man game, for myself, I'm Matt Barnes. You can find me on Twitter at @Matt_the2mangame. I am, of course, joined by Chris Hines. You can find him on Twitter at Simply Hoops with a Z. You can check out his Simply Hoops podcast, his solo podcast. Definitely give that a listen. And you can also read his writing at simplyhoops.wordpress.com. We'd like to thank everyone for listening and your continued support. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you all later in the week. That's going to do this for this episode of the Two-Man Game. We will talk to you all next time, and we are out.
Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.